You're listening to an Art Smitten podcast.
Louise just took me into her studio and I saw a prototype for a kind of gateway piece that she's thinking about making. And I saw that you did a little sketch for it first. Do you often sketch your pieces before you start making them?
I do now. When I first... So we were talking about some earlier works before, and when I made those, I just get going. I just have particular materials I wanted to use, and I'd really just let them inform. I'd sort of just get started and then let it inform itself, and I kind of liked the way that that felt like emulating like how growth in nature would occur, like that it kind of was organic in its methodology. But now I do sketch a lot more. I feel like I have more ideas that come to me kind of semi-fully formed, so I do drawings of what those installations or works kind of look like until I can get at something that feels like the right thing. And then we'll work with the materials, but I feel like it's, I have a stronger visual language now, so I guess I can draw upon my repertoire of what I like to make to create ideas from. So yeah, it's a bit
sometimes,
it's like yes and no, depends on what I'm making.
Was it something that maybe your kind of tutors in art school asked you to do more than you would do naturally, do you think? I guess it's different.
Not necessarily. It's also a bit of a long way back to think about. I think it was more just like, I feel like I was really trying to break away from the way that I was making in art school, which was when I was making paintings. Like, I had a very rigid kind of idea about what I wanted them to be, and I had a kind of system that I worked with to make those works. And then branching out into making different kinds of work, I wanted to give myself the freedom to just like experiment with things. So I was trying to not prescribe to myself what it had to be, and just allow the process to happen. And I think then I did that for a few years, and now that I've done that and know how to handle some of these materials and know what I like to do, I can project into the future what they might look like, because I have a bit of a mastery of them. But it's like we were just talking about making some garments that I want to make out of found materials, and I was like, silk ties, definitely want to work with them. And was like, I'm just going to start collecting them. Like, I know that's going to work. I know that I can sew them together to make pattern pieces. But then last night I was like, oh, that's what it's got to be. And then the idea came to me about the particular cut of the garment. And then I did a quick drawing just to like catch that idea so that it doesn't like fly off into the ether.
That's fair enough.
But like, I'll show you the drawing, which obviously, sorry for everyone on the radio, you won't be able to see it, that it's like, it's not a super sophisticated drawing.
No, it's a sketch.
It's a sketch to just be like, don't forget that's the plan.
Yeah, which is useful. And you can look back on that as well, even if you don't start making that piece this year, you could look back on it and think about it again.
And it's like, I feel like a lot of the drawing that I do will be like when I'm making notes, and then I'll just do like a, it's more like diagram making, maybe more than like elaborate drawing.
Product design.
Kind of that too sometimes. Like, or trying to figure out the logistics of how something works, like, or measurements or like things like that. But I can remember like looking through an old like notebook and there being a drawing which was essentially like, I don't know, like a spiral inside a rectangle and like a squiggle, and that was like the idea for this particular beaded canvas work that I made. And when I looked back and I was like, oh yeah, that's exactly what the idea was, there was my like little sketch being like that one. And then I started making it. I hadn't sort of like planned out the colors. I was just like, I know I want to use these beads, it's going to be like this, I want it to have this feeling, and this is a glimmer.
I was just thinking, if you know, knowing that you come from kind of a painting background, And I know that you do work with canvases, but you're very much into this kind of beaded thing now. Do you feel like you miss painting at all?
As a medium? Not really, because I feel like what I'm doing is kind of scratching the same itch.
Yeah,
I kind of think of them as paintings.
Yeah,
but there have been a couple of times where I've done painting, like as an activity in different situations, like at somebody else's workshop or in lockdown. Andy and I did some painting in an afternoon,
nice.
And I can remember doing that and feeling like, hello, my old friend.
Yeah.
And like, it felt really comfortable and nice, but it also felt like my my hand eye connection was a little bit out, like I hadn't used that skill for a long time, so I was a bit rusty, which was a bit frustrating. But yeah, it was still in doing it was pleasurable, but I don't think I'll really go back. I guess the reason that I stepped away from making paintings is because I felt like I couldn't align the materiality of what they were to the concepts that I was working with.
I think that's fair. I think a lot of your work also takes from fashion design and textile.
Yeah.
Which would be really hard to kind of recreate.
Yeah, it just doesn't really... feels... It's just not right. It's not quite... it's like the material and the message need to be in harmony with one another, and it just is a bit of a disconnect there.
Definitely.
But, I think a lot of the work that I've made too, as you say, like even if it is not necessarily making fashion, which I also make, I'm just really interested in the way that fashion is used as a semantic device and how it is a marker of power or desire or aspiration, and about what it can communicate about when and where one is and what they believe or what they align themselves with, what they do in their life,
how they want to perform
or how they're required to perform.
Yeah.
You know, it's like you have a particular uniform for doing a certain job, or you know, your clothes kind of match your situation. And then there's wiggle room within that.
Definitely.
And I'm interested in those constructs, I guess. And I'm interested in the way that it changes and shifts and is, like, very much, in my opinion, connected to the capitalist structure of, like, you know, they both require the new. You know, like, fashion is all about the new.
Totally, at the moment, with like micro trends and
but I feel like even going back, that's like
that's always there.
That's always the vibe. It happened. It's at an accelerated pace now, as you say. But that's like, I feel like that's essential to what it is.
Yeah.
It has to be constantly, and that's what's exciting about it, because it's reactive. And generative. It's
not necessarily a negative thing to be so fast-paced as well.
No, I mean, and I think it makes sense in the cultural landscape that we live in. Everything's fast.
Yeah, that's true.
I think that, I guess I also kind of was interested in it, or how I sort of got to where I am now from painting, is that I'd always collected, like, all of these things from the op shop, like textiles or things that were connected to fashion or crafting, which have a broad crossover as well. And I liked the labor that was in them, or I liked the quality of materials. It was very much about value, things that were valuable, and whether that was like inherent value to the material, like something that we've decided is precious, or if it had like a lot of tenderness or care into what it was. I'd be really attracted to those things, and
kind of archiving it as well.
It is sort of, it's funny with the archive thing though, because I don't know if we've talked about this before, I feel like maybe it might have come up, but It's like for a long time I'd collect things that I would have as like being too good to use. It's like they kind of exist in this archive or this stuff that I could potentially action, but I'd always like skip over because I might need them for something better.
It's like when you get a pack of stickers as a kid and you don't want to use like the best ones.
You keep them, but then it's like they don't actually they're there to be used. And using stuff that comes secondhand from other people allows me to kind of use it. Like it feels, it's like if the packet of stickers was already opened and three of the stickers were gone. It makes me feel like I have more permission to use all of the stickers.
And you're giving it a new life as well. Like,
but I do still sometimes, like if I find something that's, like I found this dress at the op shop the other day for a project that I'm thinking about making over the next year. And it was a run, like what I call a running through the fields dress, which is this particular type of 1970s dress that in the secondhand market that I'm traveling in is usually made of a synthetic chiffon, and I guess the high quality ones would be made of silk. And they're double layered and they've got a sheer overlay of this chiffon-y kind of material. They're usually like a fitted bodice with an A-line skirt, and they've got big floaty sleeves, or they might have some kind of like neck ruffle long thing.
So good.
They're a particular type of hostess gown.
So good.
And they kind of reference like a turn of the previous century bohemian look. Anyway, this one was white with like blue flowers on it. It's a color scheme that I don't particularly like, but I was like, oh, it fits the parameters of the type of thing that I'm looking for. But it was in primo condition.
That would be hard.
It was quite beautiful. And the price was like teetering on the edge of being right for me, but it was also like a bargain for someone who would actually wear it. And I ended up leaving it because I was like, I don't know if I can justify cutting this up.
I like, do that in the op shop too, or like I'm not sure whether, I mean, for me, if it's just buying clothes, it's kind of like I'm not sure whether I will give this the best life possible compared to someone else. I think that's a good thing. Like, I think,
yeah, it's like, can I give it a good life?
Like, that's kind of the point of,
or am I the right person to archive this?
Yeah.
It's funny though, because I have other friends that also work with material culture who don't have that impulse. Like they don't, they're definitely collectors of stuff, but I don't think they, whatever it is that holds me back from like just hacking into it.
Did you op shop a lot with your mum?
Yeah,
me too. I think it's kind of those arbitrary rules that we've given ourselves that they might have instilled.
It's like it's
in
still there. I think that's definitely true. I think it's also just, it's like part of what I'm attracted to is like, as I was saying before, is about the value in these things. And it's like I want to respect them. It's like I guess the beads in the first instance were really easy because I would find the jewelry that they'd been turned into really hideous. It's out of fashion, it's been discarded. The beads themselves are good, but the thing that they've been turned into is not, so I have no problem cutting it up. But then occasionally, like, I'll find one that's actually good and I might have bought it to use in an art, like as beads for artworks, but then I'll end up wearing it. Or it goes in the good pile. But the arbitrary rules we give ourselves are in it that I think exists in a lot of people's art practices.
Definitely.
Mm-hmm.
Just in people's lives, really.
Yeah.
I think, collecting, I was thinking when you were speaking about collecting these ties and the sketch that you just showed me before, I was wondering whether you normally, I mean, with collecting, it kind of just is what you see, what you like, what you want to take home. But is there kind of a stepping process there where you think of something with ties, decide to collect ties, collect enough ties to make it, or is it sometimes that you'll collect things and then notice the patterns of things you've collected and make something out of that?
It's both, but I feel like where I'm at in my practice now, it's sort of the same as when we were talking about like making sketches. I feel like I have a little bit more maybe like autonomy in the direction, which sounds like a funny thing to say, but I feel like I don't have my resources are limited. Like, my time is limited, my cash flow is limited, my space is limited. I don't have the ability to have like an absolutely amazing like dragon's cave of treasure to pull from.
That's the goal, obviously. Obviously.
And so I definitely still, like, when I go shopping for things, will buy whatever I see that catches my eye and then do that pattern recognition thing. But in the instance of the ties, it's more how you described it, where it's like, I think I want to make something with ties. Now I've started collecting them. I'm trying to be really discerning with what I collect. Like when I was at the op shop and bought the three that I bought the other day, there were like 10 there that I had in my hand. And then I was like, no, just get
silk
these primo ones. And there are a couple of other silk ones that were nice, but I was like, I don't really like these colors.
Yeah.
And I was like, so why?
Why get them?
Why get them? But which previously I would
hard
have.
Hard to do.
And yeah. Well, it's also, yeah, it's like, you know, my whole practice is basically turning my proclivity for collecting or hoarding into an art practice, which is, I think, a really great way to channel that impulse. But I guess, you know, that my practice is also about, like, what those impulses are or, like, why I'm kind of picking apart, like, the systems around that. So... yeah, I try to just get the cream of the crop, kind of. Like, I feel like I made the decision to go in this direction at about 18, and I've never kind of looked back from there, but I did have some moments when I was about 28, 29, where I guess it was like approaching 30, which I didn't think I was freaking out about, but I think in hindsight I did have, you know, like some I guess people would call that like your Saturn return or whatever. But I had some moments where I was like, oh, maybe I should kind of go in that direction, or like I had psychology as a backup plan, and at different times I've looked into doing art therapy. And had people encourage me towards doing that, but I feel like maybe it, really where I'm at now is, I, as you say, it's like it's there in the work. I don't know if I need to actually pursue it in a formalized sense, and I don't know, it's like I was brought up in a household where discussions about human behavior were just part of our everyday conversations, and it's like even when I don't know what the work's about, I know what I'm about, and I feel like that underpins me as a person, and I guess I can't separate it.
But also like now, why you're performing the process as well.
Yeah, and I guess I'm interested in why people do what they do. I think a lot of artists are, you know, that's really what most art making is about. But I think where I'm at with thinking about psychology now is, like, I think it's still really interesting, and I read a lot of psychology, I guess, ideas around psychology and science, but I think it's just a particular lens that we look at ourselves through, and I think that it's a really interesting lens, but I think that there are lots of things that can be considered from different vantage points, you know. It's
not the be-all, end-all.
No, it's just one way of describing how we are.
Yeah.
Through a particular methodology that is scientific. And
art can do that too.
Art does do that. But it also, I think art allows for a little bit more magical thinking.
Yeah.
And I like that space of being able to probe at things without having to actually prove a hypothesis or like...
yeah, I'll provide evidence.
Yeah, no, I just can make it up as I go. It's like, it's whatever I want it to be because I say so, which just doesn't really fly in the scientific fields.
No, not at all.
Yeah.
Well, that could be something interesting to collaborate with in the future as well.
Definitely. And I think the way that my brain works and like what it makes me feel satisfied or something, like it feels like I get pleasure from it, is like and I think a lot of artists feel like this, or creative people, it's like bringing different disparate or seemingly disparate ideas together and creating some sort of conversation between them, or like parallel or overlaying them in a particular way. I feel like that's how I want to be working with the ideas that maybe like I'm exploring as an artist, or a psychologist might be exploring in a particular way, but I want to be able to pull at those tensions more.
Yeah.
But a collaboration could be interesting. I don't know what it would be yet.
I think that kind of pattern recognition or comparison is what really got me into curation in the first place. Even just like being at my nan's house, who was also a bit of a hoarder or a collector,
She's got the bug.
She had the bug, and I think I've got a bit of the bug too, but I just remember it was always really satisfying, like, finding objects that I could kind of put in communication and, like, yeah, create that connection between. Even if it was just in my head, it's still, like...
But everything exists just in our head.
That's
like,
true.
It's like it only exists outside of our head because we have the ability to communicate it. Or like, you know, there's nothing more powerful than a shared belief, you know. And like we make up, essentially all of our culture is something that we have made up. And it exists in someone's head first. And it's so like true. It's only if the idea catches on that then we all like agree that that's what we're doing now.
So true.
You know, like... yeah, I don't know. I know exactly what you're talking about with making those connections between objects, and like, it's my favorite. Like, it's
just satisfies your brain, my brain.
It satisfies my brain so much too. I feel confused by people who don't have that. Like, I'm like, what do you mean? But you know, people's brains work in all kinds of different amazing ways. But it's like, you know, we're sitting here in my home with my studio attached, and you'll look around and it's like basically every little object is talking to the object next to it by some arbitrary conversation that I've made up that satisfies in my mind some kind of connection. There's a method to the madness.
I love it.
Yeah.
I love all your things. Thanks. I love things.
I love things too. I love things. I guess that's an underpinning for my art practice, though. Like, I love stuff. Things are great, but like there's nothing quite like the thrill of going and finding a new thing, right? And it's like those memes that are like, maybe this time the thing, like going and buying a new thing, will fill the insatiable void. This time I'm sure it'll work. Like, I'm really interested in what that drive is and how we've gotten to a point now where, like, we know we're killing the planet and ourselves through our desire for more stuff, and we can't stop, won't stop. And, like, I know that to my core, but I still want more stuff.
I think that that's where secondhand things come into play. And I think what I've learnt from always up shopping my clothes and everything in my life is that often the better things are secondhand, because they're made with more quality, they're made a long time ago. There's also an element of them being a bargain in a way where you can kind of discover it for yourself. That's the best.
Yeah, like you're speaking my language. Yeah, like I was talking about this the other day, though, about the idea of the bargain, because, like, bargains are my lifeblood, essentially. Like, my partner and I have this cute story about, like, us going to a market together and me basically, like, unbuckling my seatbelt and being half out the car before he'd even finished parking, and him just turning to me and saying, "Babe, what are you doing? Are you running to the bargains?" And me being like... Obviously. I wasn't kind of... cognizant of what I was doing. I was just acting on impulse, and because I was excitable and I was getting ready to go get a bargain. I can remember having another conversation where I was a little bit up on my moral high horse about secondhand, which I still really like that position in the saddle, but I was talking with an auntie about buying things secondhand and kind of pontificating about how everyone should be doing that, and there's enough stuff in the world, and as you say, like all of these things about buying secondhand that are actually, I think, you know, you get better stuff. And she made this point about like that being this privileged position that relies upon other people getting more stuff because they're throwing out their stuff. Like, it relies upon there being still the creation of more things for people to feel like they can throw out their stuff. You know, there's an excess of abundance, so people are able to part with their things. Whereas I suppose if you're living in a time or a place where that's not the case, people aren't just disposing of their things, which works well for me with wanting to collect things. But yeah, it's a funny. It changed my perspective a little bit, I suppose, and I'm really glad to have had that conversation because I feel like I want to pull that out in my work. I'm interested in these kind of generational discharges of particular things where something just goes out of vogue completely and all of a sudden it's available.
Yeah.
Really free, like, you know, it's a bargain or really free. Even the idea of the bargain, it's like, it's based around like regimes of value, right? It's
definitely.
Like, it's you're getting something for cheaper than the amount that it could potentially
that the
be
quality
worth.
Of it is, or yeah.
Yeah, which I love, but it also, so I was having this conversation the other day that was like kind of about the ethics of the bargain, and like if you know something is worth a lot, like say you go to an op shop and you buy a vase for $2 that you know is worth $6,000 because it's a collector's item, for example, like are you kind of stiffing the op shop for not letting them know that what they have on their hands is more valuable than what they've ascribed the value of it, because somebody, whoever's priced that item, has that's how they valued it. They'd be like, oh, this doesn't have very much monetary value, it's $2.
It also relies so much on your prior knowledge of trends or quality of items,
and I feel like I also love gathering that knowledge.
Yeah, me too.
Like and when with getting the like collecting things, one of in my like it's like what behavior would I be displaying in going and getting stuff. So like after I've gone and I've done my shopping and I've found the things that I want to take home with me and I'm satisfied that I've gotten a bargain, part of the process then is getting home and unpacking all of my things and looking at them. And it's like if there are things that need to be cleaned, especially like things like homewares like ceramics or glass or whatever, like I'll do that first. And so then they cannot be nice and sparkly, you know? But it's like, then what I'll do is I'll look up whatever it is about it to gather more knowledge about what that particular item is.
Okay.
I'll like get excited about like,
cool.
I don't know, like, yeah, I'll like probably already have some idea of what it is.
Yeah, but it's nice to do the research.
Yeah, but then I'll do the research and then I can go down like a rabbit hole, like doing the research for however long, and then I'll find out heaps of stuff about it. And like how they came to exist in the world or whatever. And that's also a really satisfying part of the process. I don't know. I feel like most people that collect things have some kind of system in place though, like where they
definitely
do that.
I know I do.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, for sure. For sure. Yeah, it's really just like research. I think if you're addicted to up shopping, thrifting or whatever, you're kind of addicted to the research that surrounds it, knowing what brands are good quality to look out for, knowing how, like, you know, even these like kind of very American style single stitch t-shirt things, like knowing what to look for there and like testing while you're in the shop the quality of everything. Like, well, it's a whole process.
I love what you're doing with your hands right now too, which is like the action of being in an op shop and being a person who turns a garment inside out to look at the stitching or to look at the tag to satisfy probably some prior knowledge that you already had about the material quality of what the thing is.
Definitely.
And I feel like if I see someone else doing that at the op shop, I like have a moment of like kindred spiritness with them where like it's like, oh, we're both looking for these particular things that you've just described.
We both know what we're about.
Yeah, well, we both know what we're about, cool. And what it's like, what these things are about. I don't know, because it's like sometimes people, like I also like looking online at like people that give advice to people about how to like op shop well, or
that's
like
a big thing now as well.
Yeah, I'm like, I should do that. I'd probably make bank. But also like I a lot of the knowledge that I have, I don't think about as knowledge, because it's just satisfying like my general interest. But it's, I just assume because I have this knowledge that other people share it. But
it's that like not everyone goes in and like looks at everything and looks at things a certain way, and also not people don't really want to as well. They're not that interested in it.
And I think I realized early on that I mostly just wanted to go op shopping by myself.
Oh, definitely.
It's like
I don't, headphones on.
Yeah, just, no one else's like expectations or time frame being involved, because I just need to take the time that I need to take. And then also if I like, I occasionally do go op shopping with like another friend such as yourself, you know, who like also enjoys op shopping. But I think then it's obviously really important to go with someone who's not looking for the same kind of things that you're looking for, because that's when problems ensue, you know.
Definitely.
Are in competition for the limited things that are available at the op shop.
When you're making a piece, I'm looking at, Louise has made a very beautiful kind of topographical beaded piece. We're sitting in her lounge room, and she told me earlier that it took her 9 months to make, but she feels that now she could make it faster. Do you think that, do you think that taking the time to make these pieces is still kind of relevant to you, or are you more interested in, you know, speeding up the process?
Like slowness is still important. Like a lot of the work that I make is really like I'm not slow, it's time consuming.
Definitely,
you know, like it the practice
must be so fiddly. And
yeah, I mean, like my skills are pretty good now in the sense that it's like I've done my 10,000 hours. I've done more hours than that, you know. It's I've had the practice to be able to be faster.
Yeah.
The decision making about things is faster than it once was. I think that's just like skill building.
Yeah.
Or like getting, developing a mastery of a particular material or whatever. But, I am interested in speeding up certain elements of things because I want to be able to make more work. Or bigger works, and especially with the beaded works, like the components that I'm working with are so small.
Yeah.
The outcome of the work is also small.
Yeah.
And that can be great. I like small works in relation to the body as well. Like there's something about things being smaller than your body that gives them a particular quality.
Mm-hmm.
But there's also something about works being larger than a body, or like becoming an installation that create a particular experience, and I'm interested in being able to create those kinds of environments as well. And I have been for a long time since I was at art school, but I feel like I'm really stepping into crystallizing some of those ideas, or like manifesting them. Now I'm more interested in how I can work with different kinds of materials. I think in the last little while I'm like, okay, like the beads are a big part of it, but I'm like, I think what I'm really interested in is, like we were talking about pattern recognition before, but it's like essentially finding things that are components that can be repeatable.
Yeah.
Like thinking about like, say the flower curtain that I made recently, the flower gleams. It's like essentially it's a really simple thing. It's like, okay, the collected material is fake flowers.
Mm.
The components are going to be the material swatches of fabric that they're made out of, and the methodology is going to be combining them together, which is similar to making something like the beaded work. But it's like just by nature of each component being larger, it's going to be able to create a work that's at scale. So yeah, I guess what I'm saying is I'm interested in being able to play with scale.
And lighter as well, I guess. I imagine that piece is very heavy.
Yeah, it is quite heavy. It's funny with some different works I've made at different times where I've like kind of don't get a sense of how heavy they actually are, and then it's like you pack them all into a box and I try to lift the box and it's like, oh my god.
thinking about your work, All the Treasure Together,
yeah,
2022,
yeah,
That you showed at Craft and at that costume shop.
Oh yeah, it was originally made for part of the Craft Contemporary Festival in partnership with Rose Chong's costume shop, which is an amazing institution of a space that is on Gertrude Street in Fitzroy and has been there for decades. And if you haven't been there, you totally should. It's incredible. But I feel like
I've definitely seen the front. It's got that kind of like
amazing window display. Yeah.
Zebra print paint and
pink and beige, black and white, and it's like a wonderland in there. And I would say that Rose would have the same kind of proclivities that we're talking about in terms of collecting. But so I had the pleasure of making a work for the window. I was invited to make a work there, and initially I wasn't sure if it was a project that I could take on, but I went and I met Rose, and she was wonderful, and we hit it off, and I had the privilege of being taken up into her studio, which is above the shop, and she showed me boxes and boxes of what I called retired costume jewellery that had at some point circulated in the shop, but then had become like damaged or sort of had gotten to the end of its career, its life as being usable costume jewellery, and so had been like relegated into these boxes to be used in some other capacity. And I think Rose at different times maybe had used them to then like make adornments for certain costumes, because she has this amazing thing where if you have something really particular for your costume, she and her team will help fabricate those items for you. So I don't know, like say you needed to be like a 16th century courtesan, they'd put together components of their collection, but then it's like, oh, you might need like more embellishment on your shoulders or something, and so that's what these sorts of things would be used for.
Wow.
Anyway, so I was really lucky in that she gifted me a whole heap of this retired costume jewelry to make the work out of, and so I also drew upon my own collection, and I also had community contribution that did a call out, and people gifted me amazing jewelry from their collections, and it was really special because I had quite a few people that gifted me big collections of stuff that had come from their families.
Wow.
And from women in their families that had obviously also been collectors of beautiful things, and they kind of didn't know what to do with it. They didn't want to take it to the op shop. It felt too special to just get rid of it. No one in the families actually wanted it to wear it. It wasn't it wasn't for display, you know. But it sort of existed in this this in-between limbo state where it was too good to get rid of but not good enough to keep. And so then I inherited a bunch of this stuff, but it was amazing because then people would tell me the stories of the people who had collected this jewellery, and of the memories that they had of them wearing it or of like rifling through their jewelry boxes, and about the personalities of the people who would worn it, and how they took up space in the world or walked through the world. It was an amazing experience to make that work.
I feel like it's often women and often mothers as well, or grandmothers in that kind of generational sense. That piece, All the Treasure Together, it's very kind of spiderwebby in its elements, and it did remind me of, don't know if you know Faith Wilding, she did this kind of installation. I'll show a page on the key.
I don't think I do, but I also sometimes am terrible at remembering people's names, so I'm like, I wonder if I have seen it and just don't know who to attribute it to.
A 70s exhibition. Oh, wow. Yeah. 70s exhibition called Woman House. You can look it up if you're listening. The artist is Faith Wilding, and she did this kind of very, it's more crochet based, but it's a spiderweb installation originally within this kind of small room. And I was just wondering whether you kind of, you're talking before about wanting to make kind of bigger pieces or kind of portal pieces.
wondering whether you're interested in creating more installation work that people can maybe walk into.
Yeah, and like, yes, I am interested in doing that. Sorry, I'm just looking at this work too because it's incredible, and I feel like maybe I've seen this. I'm aware of this exhibition, and I feel like maybe at some point, like at art school, I would have seen it.
Definitely.
But it's, I'm like, I probably should go back and look at her in more detail. And the, I guess I'm not sure if that is the proper title, but like what's coming up here on our Google looking at it is also the term womb room.
Yes, that was the name of the work.
The work, but yeah, I even when I was at art school, I had like all, I really wanted to make these kind of like grottos that people could go into, and like seeing that it's kind of a similar kind of construction, like a room that an intimate kind of room, almost like a meditation space that people can go into and marvel at the creation of whatever this environment is.
And kind of singular as well, like going in on your own maybe.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of, I guess it depends on the size.
Yeah.
But I think when I get to experience installation art, I really enjoy it when there are moments, even if, like, say it's a really big installation, but moments where I'm alone within the broader outcome of that installation. It's kind of like when you go to the beach.
Yeah.
It's like, it feels really special when you
you're
the only one there. Even if, it, you know, there are other people on the broader part of the beach or like the broader part of the installation, it's like when you have a little moment alone, it's, well, you get to commune with the artwork in a different kind of way than you do when you're in a group of people.
Definitely.
Yeah.
I think going off threads of Wilding's work and obviously that whole exhibition Woman House was very kind of segregated feminist. I'm wondering, I'm maybe a bit reductive to ask, but it was just International Women's Day.
Yeah.
Do you kind of, have you always had, or do you think that you have this sense of feminism within your practice? Specifically, I'm thinking, I feel like people would read that into it because it's very craft-based, traditional-esque kind of work, women's work.
Well, it's using objects of, it's all of those things that you mentioned, and it's also using objects or components that center around the material culture of women and femme people. You know, we're talking about like jewelry and adornment for the body, or particular types of garments that I'm attracted to. And I guess it's because they're garments that at different times, like, I've been interested in putting on my own body. And, like, I think about the flowers and how they connect to, like, a domestic space, and also about the way that, like, women and flowers have been given this kind of relationship to one another. But I don't know, like, when I'm making the work, I guess it's like I'm a feminist through and through. I've been raised in a feminist household, and like we were talking about before, it's like an underpinning to who I am.
Yeah.
But I'm not consciously thinking like, oh, I want to be a feminist artist making work about women's issues or about feminism. I'm like, I'm just making what I'm making from where I'm standing, and I inhabit the world as a woman who is a feminist.
Yeah, it's more about the connections with other people than the kind of movement itself.
But I guess it's also like, you know, a lot of the connections that I have with people in the world are women or queer people or gender non-conforming people. Like, I don't have that many relationships with straight men.
Yeah.
So it's like the connections that I'm making are kind of centered around the concerns of the communities that I inhabit.
Definitely.
But I think it's also like maybe part of it is like we were talking about before, like the provenance of these objects and like quality and craftsmanship and that being important. Like, I value those things, and that's not gendered to me. That's about like the labor that a human person can put into an object to imbue it with significance of whatever kind, right? And it so happens that women in our culture, white Western culture, for the last, you know, a few centuries have been told that they're not able to make artwork and they've been allowed to make craft as their creative expression. But that's not like intrinsic to craft making. That's just something that has happened in our cultures. I think that there's like amazing people working in craftivism spaces where that is a central focus of what they're doing. But it's not the central focus of what I'm doing. I'm just like, well, it's art as well.
Yeah.
You know, like the domestic arts, the decorative arts, or like people working with their hands to make stuff. Like, I just don't really see a distinction between that and what we've called high art. And, you know, in different times and places in the world, there haven't been such broad, like, such sharp distinctions anyway.
Mm.
So, yeah, I guess I'm... So yes, but also I don't care.
Yeah. I more just wonder whether you've experienced kind of... I feel like when you're in the art world, you can get funneled into these spaces purely because... aesthetically, or you know, the medium that you're working with.
I think that just has to happen, and I mean, you probably have an even better understanding of that than I do from coming up through an art history and curatorship lens of looking at art. I think that that also happens within the art world because one needs to have umbrellas under which to put artworks.
Definitely
to talk about ideas. Of course, things get put into particular bubbles or ideas because that's how an audience is understanding them, and based around like whatever thematics are being explored in a particular moment, or what's interesting to people in a moment, like they can, artworks get put into that. But it's like, I think a good artwork has so many things going on in it that it's like you should be able to draw out lots of different things. And it's like, I don't know, like we're looking at this work before that womb room, and it's like, okay, well, you can draw out like feminism, and you can draw out women's histories, and you can draw out crafting. But it's like, if you wanted to look at that in a different way, it's like you could draw out like, if that work was shown again now, you could talk about environmental practices, or you could talk about like, and they obviously intersect with one another, but it's just about the lens.
Definitely.
That you're looking at the artwork through, I think.
Talking to you about last year when I was finishing my bachelor's, about kind of the art world and this whole process of networking and building a name for yourself, and all these steps that you kind of have to take, what you would kind of tell someone who was coming up in a fine art degree and finishing up and thinking about starting their quote-unquote real practice.
Their real career.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. I think do what you want. Follow your gut. Make friends with the people that you like.
Yeah.
Like, don't stand in your own way.
Yeah.
Like, don't be shy of doing... Like, if you want to say yes, say yes. And if you want to say no, say no. Like, it's... I don't know. I think that there's... We're talking about arbitrary rules. I think, like, people give a lot of arbitrary kind of rule advice. But I think the best advice that I could give is to, like... to follow your nose, follow your heart, follow your gut,
definitely.
You know, like, and that's where you'll find the opportunities that are meant for you.
Yeah.
And that sounds a bit wishy-washy too, but it's like, in terms of practical stuff, it's like, go out, see art.
It's true.
Meet people, have conversations.
If you're in Melbourne, there's almost too many opportunities, and they're happening so fast.
Well, and that's why it's like, go with what you're interested in.
Yeah.
You know, you can have broad interests, but like, I'm sure we all know what it's like to feel a particular pull towards something and to not care about something else. And
definitely.
I'm like, go with that.
Yeah.
Regardless of if it's popular or other people think you should or whatever, go with that.
Yeah.
And then I guess, like, the other thing that I think was really valuable to me in coming up was doing a lot of volunteering, which I think can be really tough, especially, like, it was a bit easier, I think,
you know, a decade ago, a bit longer, when I was doing that, because the cost of living was cheaper. And free labour is not something that everybody can afford to give. But I think that the thing that was really valuable to me in volunteering my time was about entrenching myself in certain communities, which I think you can do in other ways, but I think that kind of like hands-on experience, getting to enjoy yourself, working on projects that you care about, I don't think that really happens in the same way in paid work.
No, and it's a very useful thing to do while you're studying. I found it, even if it's, and I had to maybe I volunteered a bit less than you might have at your time, but I kind of did it once a week or once a fortnight at BOSS, and it was just so useful to get myself out of the house and looking at some art or talking to some people
talking to people who like looking at art. And
that's the key, really.
Well, I think that's the biggest thing, because also through those conversations, that's how you figure out what you're about.
And it keeps you interested as well.
And it's also like being in spaces like that, when not everybody necessarily likes what you like, I think helps you to figure out what you like. Having civil disagreement or difference of opinion with people, I think is, for me anyway, like, is really valuable in helping me to shape my opinions.
Definitely.
Because it there's something to kind of push back against. So, yeah, I don't know. Again, just do what you want. I think I'm so adamant about that because I feel like there can be a lot of pressure to do what one thinks they should be doing, or that there's, like, a right way to have a career, or that if you kind of, you know, it's back to us talking about fashion. It's like all of the things that are in fashion now and seem really interesting in the art world aren't going to, they're going to change as well.
Well, I'm interested, other than kind of this cost of living thing, do you think it's very different now for people coming up around my age compared to when you were kind of coming out of university?
I think a lot of things are probably still really the same, but I think apart from the cost of living stuff, like when I first lived out of home, which was, say a decade ago, my rent was like $400 a month. You know, and I lived in Northcote. So, like...
That hurts.
Yeah, I know, it hurts me too. Like, it hurts me too. The other thing that didn't exist in quite the same way as it does now is social media.
Yeah.
And the ways in which artists can connect with other artists, with people who are interested in their work, with galleries, and just to see what other people are making. Like, that kind of decentralization of your geographical location didn't exist in quite the same way as it does now. And I think that's really exciting. And also, obviously, like, we all know about the drawbacks of social media, but...
Of course.
I don't know, like, I feel like... I'm really glad that I got to have the experience of reaching out to artists that maybe I admire, whether they were like on the same, whether they were parallel in their experience of their practice, like that they were coming out of art school or whatever, or if they were much more established or wherever they were in the trajectory of their lives and careers. Like, there are connections that I've made with people whose work that I like through that platform that I don't think I would have been able to make 10 years earlier.
Yeah.
Reach out to people that you like, you know, like you like their work, like send them a DM, like send them an email. Yeah. Like, the worst thing that's going to happen is that
they're too busy.
But then you're in exactly the same position that you are now. Like, obviously you need to be like respectful of people. You can't just like stalk people online and harass them, but disclosure,
definitely don't do that.
But I feel like it makes the room a lot smaller.
I'm always curious when I'm talking to you and people a bit older than me in the art world, just thinking about like kind of the culture around Melbourne art, like networking or, you know, working in galleries. And I feel like with my age group and even a bit younger, there's so many more people who know what curating is, or maybe a larger influx of people leaving art school who probably are going to stay in the arts.
It seems to me that we're moving into a space where there's more room, like the river's reached the delta, you know, like these different streams can all kind of coexist, and we see that in fashion. You know, I think that that fashion, like, you know, thinking about like how we present ourselves and like the taste that we have, but I think that that happens in art too. Like, I think that there's more space for people making whatever it is that they are making, whereas maybe earlier trends would happen in a particular way, and if you were making work that didn't fit to the parameters of whatever contemporary art in that moment was, no one cared what you were doing. Whereas I feel like there's a little bit more openness now to people speaking in their own unique voice, and that being desirable.
Definitely.
And I think that's really exciting.
Yeah.
But, like, the art world is still really elitist, right? Like, of course. There's a lot of the machinations of power within the art world. Like, I don't think they're vastly different now, 10 years ago, 50 years ago, 100 years ago. Like, I think it's...
Well, that's what the whole system is built on.
There's maybe a little bit less gatekeeping now, and I think that,
or it's like, harder to gatekeep.
Yeah, and that's
well,
it. Yeah, I think that's exactly. Yeah. It's like, it's harder to gatekeep those things, and social media has a big, or like the internet in general has a big part to play in that. Yeah. And I think that's exciting.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah,
I'm excited. I'm excited to see what having more people, young people in arts, like, administration side of things is gonna, how that's gonna affect things.
I think it's exciting. I don't know, I just am like, the more the merrier.
Yeah.
You know, like, okay, stay with me. Think about when you're a child and a teenager and now, how like anyone can ask you like what kind of music you like, and you'll have an answer. And like, I know that there are some people out there who don't really appreciate music in any way. That's fine. You can still play this game. But, like, people in general have a concept of what they do and don't enjoy listening to. Taste, and they can and they can communicate that. And it, like, that's, like, a pretty basic, like, getting to know you kind of question.
Yeah.
Right? Imagine if we could all do that for art.
If enough people had basic knowledge,
yeah, like, what have you been looking at lately,
basic interests,
what kind of drawing excites you, like, and that people were thinking in that way about art making. Like, I feel like what we're talking about is there being a bigger pool of people who are
definitely
thinking about visual culture in that kind of way, and I have a general interest and are able to talk about it. I'm like, I want everyone to have that, and I think art is for everyone.
Well, who think that they are,
yeah,
kind of, when I start talking to them at parties or whatever, and they, I'm like, oh, you know, I'm getting really into this, and I'm kind of explaining things to them, and then sometimes even they'll pull out an artist that they've been looking at recently, and they'll go, oh, you know, I'm not so knowledgeable on art like you or whatever. And they're kind of like scared of showing me in a way, and then it's always like some amazing artist that I've never seen before that I'm so grateful that they've shown it to me, like, and is tasteful and interesting, and but they kind of have this, I mean, I guess it's that gatekeep elitist fear.
Yeah, they're worried that they're going to be thought of as stupid or like that what they say is not going to be good enough.
Yeah.
And, like,
it's never the case.
I wish you could see my face, Mike, right now, because it's like my disgust face of, like, oh, that again. Like, systems that make people feel like they're not good enough. Feels wasteful to me to do that to one another.
We've been talking about collecting, the practice of collecting, and I know that you sometimes make more wearable pieces on a kind of commission base. So kind of a twofold question here. One is that I know that you also, I mean, I'm sitting in your house right now, I'm enjoying a lot of your collected art. Would you consider yourself an art collector? And if so, I guess, what are the thoughts about that, of the practice of collecting art versus homewares?
I guess, yes, I do like to collect art. I feel like it was something that I was more able to do when my rent was cheaper. There was a time when my partner and I were like putting money aside every week into an account that was called Art Power, and we'd match each other, like how much money we'd set up. Oh, we're going to put, you know, $20 in this week, or $100 in, whatever, and we'd put in money into that account, and then at different times when an artwork that we really liked would come up, we'd already have a fund there to draw on. That was especially awesome. For buying art. And it was great, actually. Like, and we bought quite a few pieces through doing that, and it allowed us to splurge on pieces that were, you know, a lot of money for us, without having to worry too much, because it was also kind of pre like art money or something like that, which I guess like makes that a lot easier now. But yeah, in the last little while, I feel like that's slowed down a bit, but I still like have my eye on different works that I would like to get. I think it's just harder now. Yeah. But in terms of like, rather than collecting homewares or something, I'm like, they're the same. It's all the same to me.
Yeah.
I worked at Croft Victoria for about 8 years, and I've got quite an extensive collection of beautiful work from artists that make in a crafting capacity. So I guess you would call them the decorative arts. Like some of those pieces are functional wear that I, you know, like they're literally the plates that we eat dinner off, and some of them are more sculptural, and some of them fall somewhere in between. But I have them on display as I would artworks, and I also use them.
Yeah.
And in my mind, they're the same. Within our house, we both know the name of the creator of the piece, and can call upon it and recognize the objectness of it,
which is awesome.
The same as we would for the artworks that are in our collection. And I don't know, like in terms of like the other, like all the secondhand stuff I have, like a lot of it is handmade or small batch run, some of it's not. But it's like a lot of the, I guess what I'm saying is, a lot of those things would have been made by the individual hand of a particular artist or artisan as well. I just don't know who they are, or they worked under the name of a company or whatever. But I'm like, it's all
art, really.
I think it is. And like that question that you had before about like craft and feminism, it's like, yeah, but in my mind, it's all. Like, I guess I have broken down those hierarchies so much in my own head, or they weren't there to begin with, that I'm not kind of interested in. I don't feel the need to.
Influenced by. Yeah.
I don't feel the need to, like. I'm not trying to push up to get to the top spot in the hierarchy, because I think it's pretty flat. Like, there are big conversations around the distinctions between, like, art and craft and design, which I'm kind of also a bit disinterested in. I don't care, really. But. There are certain distinctions there that you can pick apart on a philosophical kind of level or a practical level, but I like it all.
Yeah.
And they all communicate something, and my mind can be activated in the same way.
Yeah.
And so I'm like, they're all doing the same thing.
Yeah.
Aren't they?
Yeah. How about with kind of collecting wearable pieces?
Well, I think it's the same.
Yes.
Yeah. You know, like. And the addition of a wearable piece is that you get to wear it.
Yeah.
You know, like you get to show it off. Or like that, you know, the art gallery becomes where you're walking down the street, you know, or like what is it, like the idea of like the theater of your life. Like it's like everything's unfolding around you, and you get to be adorned in this thing. Like there are pieces in the
the collection, like in my collection of clothing, I would say most of it is secondhand, vintage pieces that I've collected for many, many years. And then in more recent time, I've also been able to collect pieces by other artist fashion designers. Like I'm kind of, I'm not particularly interested in like big brands. Like the, I like the craftsmanship that exists in like couture houses and like the idea of the legacy of these kinds of spaces. But I don't really particularly follow what's happening in like the fashion world in that kind of way. But I'm more interested in like,
well, it kind of bleeds down, doesn't it? It's like that scene in Devil Wears Prada where she's like,
We all know it. It's the cerulean blue sweater, like that, you know, you just picked
it
out of the basket.
It does really trickle down. And I think it trickles down with styling as well.
But it trickles up too. And I think I'm more interested in how it trickles up.
Yeah.
Like in how people put things together, the things that are in play, whether it's like all the stuff that's come before through history, it's all the secondhand stuff that exists around us, and then the stuff that people create out of necessity because, you know, they want to wear it or they want to have it, or, you know, they're crafty and they can. Drawing from so many different cultural references with things that are in play now, with things that are referencing, cycling back to past fashion. That's the kind of stuff that I'm really interested in. And I think that's also the kind of stuff that real big fashion houses are really interested in.
Definitely.
Because that's where it feeds back up to then trickle down again.
Yeah.
The collection of stuff that I like to wear, like I feel like probably one of my first loves in art was putting dress-ups together and like creating narratives and characters and ideas through a dress-up box. And I feel like I just did that for my whole life through, and it stopped being just a game but was also like what I would just wear.
But when you're buying wearable pieces from other artists, do you look more for adornment and jewelry, or do you find yourself buying like kind of fashion pieces, like dresses and things?
Often it's like, it seems to have been more like it's like adornment, yes, but also like kind of like outerwear, like accessories. Like often it's things that are kind of like superfluous in the sense that it's like you don't need to be wearing an amazing collar.
But I want to.
It's a bit of a mix. I do have a lot of like incredible jewelry from when I worked at Craft. It is often more durable. Depending on what kind of materials it's made out of, and it has the ability to continue to give in ways that maybe other garments don't, just because you can, you know, like I can wear the same necklace 30 days in a row and it's going to be fine, whereas I couldn't wear the same garment 30 days in a row. And I think that's also just about the communities that I've been in, and like I'm trying to do a quick inventory of my collection in my head, and I don't think that I own anything by an art, like a by a contemporary artist now who's making work across all of the things that I consider that to be that isn't someone that I know in some capacity. And I'm just like, I'm like, is that true? And I'm like looking around. But I'm like,
well, I think it makes sense because you're also making jewellery.
And it's like, and I'm also making art. And I think that part of the way that I connect to objects is also like I wouldn't want to live with an object made by a person I didn't like. But it's like there's lots of pieces that I have that I love even more because I know the person who made it, and it's imbued with that relationship. So every time I wear it or look at it, like I think of them.
Do you have any favourites at the moment that you've been styling? I liked your white orchid earrings the other day.
Yeah, totally. My friend Ebony Russell, who's an amazing artist, she just gave them to me, and it's embarrassing because I've momentarily forgotten the name of the artist who made them, which instead of rummaging right now, we can put in the show notes.
Definitely.
For anyone who wants to have a look. But they are incredibly... they've been made with those 3D pens. they're not.
Right.
No, do you know what I'm talking about?
That's so 3D. Delicate. Like the ones that you... I used to see videos of them like a few years ago when 3D was just coming out.
Yeah.
Where you like draw this kind of like silly string-esque substance.
Yeah, it's kind of, it's like 3D printing but out of a pen.
Yeah.
And so that's how they've been created. And the artist who made them, she used to do a lot of work with other sustainable materials.
Mm.
Like she'd gather graffiti paint, like you know how layers of paint on a wall will create almost like a substrate
and chip off
kind of. So she'd gather that, and then she was doing stuff where she was like using almond shells. So I'm sure we all know what almonds are, but maybe not everybody knows that they're a nut that comes inside a shell that kind of looks like a peach pip. And the part that you eat is the seed inside the hard. Like if you've ever cracked open a peach pip or a nectarine pip, they have the same kind of structure.
Kind of like a walnut-ish.
Sort of-ish. Yeah. But they're kind of the shape of an almond. And so she was getting these shells, the outside shells, and then she was like layering on the paint onto the outside. But then they'd have these like this beautiful kind of like a beetle wing kind of teardrop shape. She was making jewellery out of stuff like that.
Cool.
I've got a pair of earrings that I was given for my 30th birthday by my partner Andy, by the artist Zaber Khan, which are cast cardamom pods, like linked together, a number of them, and then they also are in silver, and they have a carved date seed at the top and at the bottom that kind of almost looks like marble or something. Yeah, she's treated it in this way that's just absolutely amazing by carving it back. But she's an incredible artist. You should definitely look her up. She makes lots of different things, but adornment is central to her practice. And I think they're probably my almost like one of my most special pieces.
Mm.
Got this amazing necklace that I sometimes wear that's by Lorelei Wilson. That's called A Heart in Two Pieces. That's like this big chunks of mica. That's
that one is quite an impressive piece.
But I think that the thing about wearing these particular like pieces in my collection, adornment or different items of fashion, is the way that they make me feel. And with the jewelry and other adornments that I make, I want to. What I'm hoping for is that when people wear them, that they feel great, you know, or that they feel powerful, or that they, you know, that there's whatever that they've emblazed those works with, whatever it means to them, that when they put them on, that they're carrying that energy in their day while they're wearing it.
Making these different types of works at the same time, like concurrently, do you find yourself going through phases of making more wearable pieces and then making more fine art, quote unquote, pieces, or is it more commission based?
It depends. I kind of do. I go through phases with lots of things that I do. Like I'll be like, I'm doing gardening now, or I'm doing like I kind of like most do that, but I don't know if that's true, but like a particular thing will have my attention for a time span and then I'll move on to the next thing. But they use similar but different parts of my brain, making the wearables sometimes feels more free because I feel like there's sometimes less... It's not that they carry less thoughtfulness or conceptual merit, but I feel like they don't need to justify themselves in the same way, and that what is being imbued into them, whatever I'm getting at, like can kind of just be intuitively there. And like then I can think about it to figure out what it is that I'm getting at. But I feel like with art making, it's more important, or like it's important for me in my practice to really know what concepts I'm trying to communicate and to actually communicate them.
Yeah.
Whereas with the I think with when I've made like a collection of garments or a collection of adornment, I can say it's about whatever I want. And that kind of goes across fashion. Like you can kind of, I think there's less, not less criticality, but I think there's more ability to be able to say like, this is what I think this is. I'm evoking these particular thematics. It is what I say it is.
And there's more, there's almost more, ways, like it's more open for the viewer or the wearer to put their own thoughts onto it, whereas I feel like in gallery spaces people get kind of scared of putting their own ideas
and this is
onto
what we were
artworks.
Talking about before when you're talking about people that maybe don't consider them to be consider themselves to be part of the art world and then kind of sheepishly telling you what they're interested in. There's this fear around it. I think there's less of that in consuming fashion and also for myself in making fashion. I mean, the thing that underpins all of what I do is wanting to kind of approach everything with sustainability. You know, like some of you didn't absorb Captain Planet propaganda as a child, and it shows. But it got me good. And I don't know, like we were talking about the Thai dress just as an example, which isn't something that I've made yet. And it's that's also not an idea that, like, there's no pressure for it being like, I don't feel like I have to ground break.
No.
I can just make a dress out of ties. People have done that before. And I can make my version, and it doesn't feel like I'm stepping on anyone's toes, and it doesn't feel like it's inadequate because someone else has had that idea before.
But it is a useful, sustainable process.
And I'm going to do it in the way that I do it, and it's also going to the concepts that I'm interested in as I make that are going to become more developed as I do it, and I'm going to be able to see the connections with the rest of my practice, and you know, it's like I'll get to think about like the kinds of jobs that people who wear ties, what they do in those jobs, and what those fabric choices and colours mean within a very restrained when you think about the rest of the outfit that a tie is worn with, like the tie and maybe your socks, like they're the kind of points of differentiation that an individual is allowed to have and what that means. And then to think about like, I don't
political.
Know. Yeah.
Ideas as well.
Exactly. And political ideas run through my practice, but I don't, like, I wouldn't call myself like a political artist because I think that it is a little bit more undercover. But like I'm making my satirical remarks from the sidelines all the time.
Which sometimes is more useful long term than abrupt political art.
Yeah, I mean, I think they serve. I think they serve their purposes in different ways.
I was just thinking, when was the last time someone wore a tie to our office? Like, we do work
in an office
kind of sense, even if it is a gallery. But just thinking about like the difference between art administration, clothing, like office
wear. and other clothing. Well, it's funny because I don't think I've seen anyone in our office wearing a tie, but I have gone to meetings that also meet with like the broader branches of where the galleries sit within the university, and those people wearing ties. But it's funny because I've had this conversation with some of our colleagues who are also people who like dress, and sometimes I've worn things that I've been like, oh, you know, this is the most officey job in the arts that I've had of all of the jobs that I've had, and I've been like, oh, is it kind of officey enough?
I've had that too.
And then the kind of the attitude within the team that we have at the moment is that, oh, it's the arts, it's fine. But it's like, yeah, where does that blur depending on what role you have or how much power you have?
I always find myself dressing less creatively or like interestingly when I'm in an interview than when I'm in an arts job. especially with this job that we've got at the moment. Like, I remember I was just wearing a very kind of plain general office core outfit.
I feel like I can remember I think pretty much what I was wearing to the interview, which is like a gallerina outfit that I haven't worn for a while. And it's like, yeah, it's kind of like office core meets little black dress meets art world. Like,
so you want to show a bit of personality.
Yeah,
but I like that we get to show so much personality.
Oh,
like,
don't get me wrong, I love that too. It's funny though, when thinking about the job interview and like all of the parameters that still exist in our minds around what that is and like how you present for that. And sometimes I've thought about it too, like, I'm not in the acting world at all, but you know, like when you see actors have their like portfolio pictures or they go for their screen test and they're wearing like kind of just something like literally a basic
plain,
because it's like you don't actually want to take
one color kind of
a black singlet or a black turtleneck or whatever color, black or white usually, and it's like it's about not, it wants to be nothing. The outfit needs to be just like it read office core or it read blank canvas or read whatever.
I guess the goal is there that you speak for yourself rather than your clothes speak for you. But really, like, once you get hired for the job in real life, often I'm letting my clothes speak for me in some ways.
But our clothes speak for us ahead of us opening our mouths always.
Yeah, exactly.
But I mean, you know, that's, I guess that's what's interesting about what we're talking about, right? Is that like there are certain rules around certain spaces where people are expected to look a certain way. And that, I mean, that's like a whole other podcast episode.
Oh, it's always so interesting. I think as well, like just having tattoos, piercings and things like that.
I think,
like,
we spoke about this and I'll really quickly recap it for our listeners. There was a time when I was working in the job that we both have together now at RMIT, where someone who also worked at RMIT came in to see the art gallery, and he worked in like the business research department. I'm not even sure, you know, exactly what,
but it probably exists.
It was such a university vibe, and he was lovely, and we were chatting about the exhibition, and I just ended up asking him about himself. But he was telling me that the thing that he'd been working on for the last couple of years was research into the perception of tattoos. And he'd been doing it for quite some time, and this study's been going for a while now, and it was about like societal evaluations of what it meant to be a tattooed person and how that fit into the job market. And essentially he was like, so it got to this point where it's essentially a bell curve, where like for a very long time tattoos were undesirable, and we've gotten to a point now where, depending on the industry that you work in, that tattoos can actually be more desirable because they, instead of speaking to like criminality or fringe dwellers or whatever,
outsiders
now it speaks to creativity, innovation, entrepreneurialism, youth culture, queer culture. And so depending, I'm sure that there are still conservative industries that are anti-tats, but
even within the arts, probably, you know, still people who have these thoughts. Yeah, that's so interesting. I did kind of find myself, I feel like obviously there was pressure from parents and all the society idea that if you rock up to an interview with tattoos, you're not going to get the job.
Oh, yeah. That's like a thing,
and
right?
I often cover my arms up, but I think once I realized that I wanted an art career and I was going to pursue that, my kind of fear of having tattoos dwindled away. Like, I just kind of know now that I'm aware that having tattoos isn't going to stop me from getting the gig that I want in the art world necessarily anymore.
No, I don't think it does, but it's big concepts that we're talking about, because we're talking about like the way that ideas change over time and how people are fearful of not wanting to rock the boat or like make change, right? Like your parents, I don't know what their personal opinions on tattoos were, but like for all the parents out there that told their kids,
don't get a tattoo, I don't care if you have one, but if you have it in a visible place, your employability will suffer.
Like, they're not wrong, like...
Well, yeah, they weren't wrong.
Yeah.
But there's been enough people who didn't care about that that have pushed things to a point where now it doesn't matter.
Mm.
And I like, a lot of our ideas shift in that kind of way, you know? It's, yeah.
Which is why it's always so disappointing when people are like, oh, but, you know, that's the status quo.
But this is why you should just do what you want,
if there's
right?
enough of us, then
yeah.
we are the new status quo.
Exactly. So again,
doesn't matter.
Go with what you think the right thing to do is. Like, you'll find your community of other people who
entirely
think so too.
Be yourself.
Yeah.
That's the moral of it.
Well, that's the moral of, like, mostly everything that I do, you know?
Yeah, definitely. Alright, well, I mean, is there anything else that you'd like to kind of bring up on this level or with your practice? Is there anything that you've been interviewed a few times? Is there anything that no one's ever asked you
that
wish they had? Okay, if there isn't.
I don't know, it's like a big question. I might have to follow up with something. Like, I guess I'm also a person who likes being asked questions and then, like, I get to think about them. But, there's nothing burning in my heart that I'm like, I wish someone would just ask me that. But I'll let you know.
Yeah.
Is there anything burning that you have that you've been shy to ask that you want to ask?
I never really feel shy with you, to be honest.
I don't feel shy with you either.
I don't like chatting anyway. I feel like you're very open about everything, which has always been useful for me. I guess, yeah, my big thoughts were kind of, if the goal of this is to be on a youth-based station, so just thinking about being a quote-unquote youth under the 25, I was just interested in the chat that we had before about the difference between art or practicing art or becoming one with the art world after university now and then, and, you know, how that's, I'm just always interested in how that's developing, I guess. A lot of things stay the same, like I still have conversations with people who have a certain idea about, like, VCA art or something.
And
that's
like prestige
still,
or
that's still part of
something.
It. Like, that's probably never going to fade away, but...
I mean, I think, you know, there'll always be somewhere that is seen as the top of the pile.
Of course.
And it may not be the same institution that holds that mantle, but, that's how universities are structured, right? Like, they compete with one another as well. They want to be, like, the best at being able to deliver this particular course to their prospective customers, I mean, the students. I think what I've seen that seems really exciting is that a lot of universities that are offering courses in the creative practices within art or fashion or whatever else. I think that institutions are trying to keep up with how rapidly the conversation is developing about inclusion and power, and I think that they're trying to employ people who can speak from different perspectives.
Definitely.
And I think that's really exciting, and I think that's what we're seeing also coming through. I think there's a demand for it. I think young people especially, you know, want to have those kinds of conversations, and I think they expect that their teachers are going to be able to deliver that.
Yeah, which I've found.
Which I think
they
is,
are able to.
Which I think is really exciting, and I guess...
Or they acknowledge that they're not, and then you have an interesting conversation with the other side, which I think is useful. As well
I think that's important. That sounds fantastic that people are the awareness is there.
Do you see yourself teaching?
I mean, I would like to teach, but I
I feel like I get to do a lot of how I imagine enacting being a teacher would be for me just in my life now by just being a person and having like these kinds of conversations. Like that's the kind of knowledge sharing that I'm interested in. And I feel like with teachers that have influenced me really positively, how I always felt in communicating with them was that we were learning from each other.
Yeah.
And I feel like that is the part of being in relationship to people that are in an earlier phase or a different phase of their practice or career, is that like I'm getting to see from a different perspective for that time, and they are too. Like when I conduct workshops, like I get to teach in that capacity, and I find that really exciting. But I would love to do some teaching, but I am out of touch with how those institutions operate, and I don't know exactly where I would fit, because essentially the kind of teaching that I want to do is just encouraging people to do what they want. And to ask...
Which I can see you doing.
But, to ask interesting... interesting questions. Like, I feel like art is so abstract in the sense that, like, I don't think there's a right or a wrong way to do it, except for, like, following your passion and what driving questions are driving you, or, like, what tensions exist within you as a person that you need to excavate and share. And so I'm just interested in, like, encouraging people to feel like they can do that. And I also am nosy, so I, like, want to know. I'm like, tell me more.
Kind of what being a tutor's about.
I hope so. Well, they were the tutors that I always thought were great. Yeah. And I feel like that kind of getting to have those kinds of conversations with people who are wanting to learn. I feel like, you can go and you can go to a course about like how to do a realistic oil painting of fruit or whatever, as an example. And there are skills that one can learn, or like when I teach people how to do certain sewing skills, like that's very different. Teaching how to do a technique is very different to teaching someone or empowering somebody,
supporting them to follow their own career, or
to trust their own creative self.
Yeah. And I found, definitely I had tutors who helped with that, but also there's people like you who I found just from working or volunteering at galleries who do the same thing, and sometimes having more of a casual connection rather than a teacher-student connection helps with that as well.
And I don't know. I'm like, at uni, I feel like a lot of the relationships that you end up having can feel more casual, or like at any kind of art institution, because essentially you're really meeting as two artists, right? Yeah. Or like two creative practitioners. Yeah. And again, what I said before about like learning from each other, it's like obviously some, like the more senior practitioner will have a certain level of knowledge that a younger practitioner doesn't have yet, but the younger practitioner probably also has a lot of knowledge that the senior practitioner has forgotten about.
Yeah.
And it's I think that feeling more casual or feeling less hierarchical is interesting, because it's like, well, you're just two people talking to each other.
I also always wonder whether that's like an art specific thing, or whether there's, people have those kind of connections in things like business or, I'm sure there's mentors across all disciplines, but
yeah.
I think that kind of like being open to learning from the younger person is maybe a bit closed off in other parts of...
Yeah, because I think there are certain forms of knowledge as well, like, for example, if you're learning to be a lawyer and a senior practitioner has had so much more experience and has so much more knowledge than you about the law, you kind of are just, like, still trying to fill up your cup to get to the point where you have that kind of knowledge, which is, I think, different to something that is...
creative.
Yeah, it is. It's weird.
Yeah, it is funny, isn't it? I don't know. This is the path I'm on. So, like, when I think too hard about those other kinds of paths, I'm like, what do you do all day? Like,
I know. My new housemate is studying mathematics.
Amazing.
Like, which is awesome. But, you know, we have these conversations and I'm like, I'm just so far out of even beginning to know the structures that you're learning under or working with right now. I honestly can't give you much advice.
It's so different. But then I wonder in spaces like that, like, you know, when you see these amazing documentaries that will have like a scientist or a mathematician or whatever, and maybe they're talking about like quantum physics or like the expansion of the universe or whatever.
Yeah.
And these are the sorts of things I enjoy. But you get someone on there who's like so obsessed with whatever it is that they're obsessed with.
Mm.
And the way that they talk about it, how impassioned they are about this particular really niche thing that they've dedicated like all of their life to. Mm. I'm like, those people are the same as artists.
Mm,
like,
they are artists. They are. That's a practice.
Yeah,
that's
exactly. And I feel like maybe in those kinds of relationships, like maybe there is that breaking down of like the teacher, mentor, student kind of boundaries, because that kind of exuberance and enthusiasm that people can have for what they're interested is, that's the thing that you're sharing with each other.
Yeah, transcends everything. Yeah. Disciplines.
And like, I wonder if
social norms, like, yeah.
And maybe that does happen in the business world. Like, maybe it's like if you have someone who's like an entrepreneur who meets a young entrepreneur, like maybe they get to have that kind of feeling with each other.
Yeah, that's true.
I guess my final thing that I would say is just go for it. Like, you only get one shot as far as we know.
Just enjoy yourself.
But like, like, why not you?
Yeah.
You know, like, I think people ask themselves, like, oh, can I do it? Like, why should I be the one to do it? And it's like, well, why not you? Like, if you, you know, if you're lucky enough to have the privilege to be able to choose a creative pursuit as your life's ambition, your life's goal, like, then I think you have a responsibility to do it as best and as hard as you can, you
definitely
know? Like,
follow through on ideas.
Like, it's a privilege to get to do this.
Oh, entirely it is.
And with that comes a responsibility and standing in your own way because you're afraid that it won't be good enough, or like that it you shouldn't get to do it because someone else would be better placed to, or whatever. Like, you know, sometimes there are serious considerations to have about people being better placed than you to speak on something, but like, go for it.
Yeah,
you know, and if you're going as hard as you can and you're not enjoying it, then maybe it's not for you, and that's okay. But don't like let your own self-doubt get in the way. You gotta try
push it
as
far
you
as
know.
You can.
Yeah, totally,
definitely. Well, thank you so much for inviting me into your beautiful home.
Oh, thank you so much for coming and sharing this time with me.
I love this chat.
I love this chat too.
I always love to chat with you.
I love chatting with you too. And I hope if you're listening that you've enjoyed our chat as well.
Thanks for listening to an Art Smitten podcast. You can listen to Art Smitten live every Saturday from 12 p.m. on Syn.